Julie and Janine are from Berwyn, Illinois, two suburbs off from, did I get that straight, from Chicago?
Yep.
Julie is a pastor and pastors a church. Janie also is a pastor, but supervises chaplains who are learning to be chaplains. Is that? But probably most important in this context, she serves on city council. So we welcome you, and today we're going to talk about what does my community need and what can I do about it.
Turn on the power. I'm really glad you're all here. We will talk a lot about intercultural communication, about which I am a practitioner, not an expert. So I open to your experience and expertise. But we wanted to start this morning.
This afternoon.
I do my work as a pastor often in the morning, so it's always morning when I'm speaking. So Parker Palmer has done so many great books that we enjoy and use in our work a lot, and he talks about the sense of a broken heart. And so often we try to make that cheesy, but in the way he talks about it, it's actually this deeply meaningful sense that our hearts do break, and we have some agency in the midst of that, of do they break apart or do they break open? And we want to lean towards the breaking open because that will help us in receiving one another in our mutual heartbreak. And so we decided that we would begin this session by introducing ourselves as people who know heartbreak in our own communities and in our own lives, because in order to do this work, we've got to be in touch with that. So I am a person who comes to my community having had the experience of coming out and being rejected by my church, having to fight for people to see who I was, and also feeling like for so long in my life I had a secret that if I shared it, it would destroy me. I am not in that place anymore, and I give thanks to God for all the people who supported me along the way. But what it means is that in my community, where I live with a bunch of undocumented people, that experience of having a secret that feels like it could destroy you is very much echoed. It's not the same, but it is absolutely echoed, which means that I've got some skin in the game when we talk about how do we address the heartbreak. It's not, they're not the other, they're in it with me.
I think that Julie and I share some similar stories about coming out and the heartbreak involved in that. I'm a somewhat empathetic person, and my heart breaks quite often. When I got into politics, it was in part because my father's a history teacher, and I grew up talking politics, thinking politics, knowing about what civic responsibility and obligation is, that statesmen are people who have a simultaneous understanding of the community around them and their own efficacy and how they should, they are obligated to use that for the common good. In our community, about 4 years ago, there was an election where a group of people decided that the local school board really needed, it's a 5-municipality school district that is mostly run by Cicero. If you know anything about Chicago politics.
Or Al Capone.
Cicero is still a pretty active political entity. And it's our sister city right next door to us, but a bunch of folks from Berwyn recognized that their kids were not getting the education that they wanted them to have and determined that the way they would do that is to get on the school board. They put their petitions together to get on the ballot, which may be more information than you need to know about, but you got to get enough signatures to be a runner, and they got stymied in the courts. Power base in Cicero, and who was already on the board, coupled with our mayor in Berwyn, and made it impossible for them to be on the ballot. And the first trip to court, they all just kind of quit and caved. And my upbringing says, if you run, you go all the way. And I was really disappointed in them and for them, for these folks who, when it got hard, they realized they couldn't do it. And for somebody like me who's, you know, you got to commit and you got to go all the way, and I made the wrong statement at the wrong time, and my alderman who was going to run for another office said, put up or shut up. And so I found myself having to move my rage into action. And I think that that's one of the ways that people make change in the world. They find the energy within them and find traction to do something else. So that's my entry into this story.
So I'd like for us to also share, as you feel comfortable, very briefly, a heartbreak that you know that calls you to some kind of action. And I'm going to actually have you use a little process that, the string comes later, a little process that I like to use quite a lot in many contexts called mutual invitation. Here's how it goes. I invite you to say something, one of you, to say something, and you have a choice in that moment. You can either speak, or you can pass, or you can pass for now. There is no shame in any of those options. And don't ever try to force somebody into speaking who's not ready to speak. And if you pass for now, we'll come back to you later. The other thing, though, is you do have the obligation to invite the next person to speak. Try not to make it a circle. So we have begun. If you choose to speak, I invite you to say your name, what home is for you at the moment, and something that breaks your heart.
And also cabin number 9 up there, which we may be hosting with
Chalet.
Chalet number 9. Clinically I've worked with some really tough kids in tough situations, and I worried that I had too much of an armor in my professional career. So very few things like really strike me, but I have been very affected by the immigration, families being torn apart these last few weeks. And we talked about that in my session that just ended, and I checked email and I got to sign on to a letter that the university is sending to the Denver Post just like 5 minutes ago. So I'm like really happy that I got to do something while I was even here holding to kind of help with that. I plan to do more when I get back home.
And now you'll invite the next person to speak. And since you don't know names, you can just love you.
Okay. One of the things that breaks my heart is I live in a country that has arguably one of the highest inequality, highest Gini coefficient in terms of inequality between rich and poor. Mm. It's a constant, daily, in-your-face reminder. I live in a position of immense privilege, and confronted every single day by people who are essentially shut out from the economy and from the opportunity of that, and just caring for themselves, their children, their families. You don't get to stop at a traffic light without having somebody there with a rubbish bag wanting to collect your rubbish, because they can't beg, because then they'll be in violation of bylaws and will get moved. Mm. And it's exhausting. Mm. And it's devastating. And what do you actually do? Mm. And how do you respond as a follower of Jesus? And sometimes it's just like, it's really, it's like it's a daily thing.
Thank you. And so I don't really know my new communities that I'm going to be a part of very well. I'm going to be a part of a university community, a city, God willing, a church community. So the community that is coming to mind right now in terms of heartbreak is a community that I am a part of regardless of where I live, which is my family of origin. My mom and my sister have not spoken for 17 years now.
Wow.
And it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And I kind of bounce around with different heartbreak issues, but the one that keeps coming back is I remember when in younger years we rejoiced in the tearing down of the Berlin Wall. Mm-hmm. And so when we as a nation start building a wall to separate families and nations, I just have heartbreak for our country.
I'm just extremely frustrated with my own church, which we've been members of for over 31 years, no, 38 years, and I'm very much friends with everyone, get along with everyone, but what I believe and what they believe are polar opposite ends. They're, I'm very liberal Democrat. They're all very wealthy Republicans in the Broadmoor area. And, you know, my kids grew up with their kids and we all know one another and they put up with me kind of almost kind of, isn't she cute, isn't she interesting? You know, just ignore what she says. She's really fun to be with, but don't take her seriously. And one of the issues that I've been fighting for forever in this church, it just seems so simple to me. They're United Church of Christ. I joined United Church of Christ. I was raised in Missouri Synod Lutheran, and they were so far to the right. You had to believe A through Z to be saved. You couldn't, I remember when I went to St. Olaf College, a minister came and said, if we ever find out that you went to church at St. Olaf, you know, you will be excommunicated or if you ever do communion with that body. They're not Missouri Synod. It was just bizarre to me. I ended up, as my rebellion, I just went ahead and got one of my majors was religion. I think I was wanting to get excommunicated, but somehow the church I belonged to never found out what it was. Anyway, so issue after issue, I'm polar opposite of everyone. But to me, it's so simple. United Church of Christ was the first church to really work hard, you know, to ordain gay people, and I mean, they just, as a community, they're amazing what they do with peace and justice, but this church is more like a continuation of the country club, and they seem to enjoy, as I said yesterday, after the sermon, which they don't listen to, they enjoy just having fellowship hour, and, you know, it just, this open and affirming thing has been my main issue the last 10 years. And the new minister finally allowed that to happen, and we became open. And that was a big deal. A lot of people left the church because of that. But they refused to allow them to be affirmed. So we're open. We'll take your money, we'll take your time and talents, but we will not affirm your lifestyle. And to me, it just is outrageous. So I look at this, I mean, I speak my own truth. I mean, it's to the center of the circle, I listen receptively to them, and they listen to me and smile and wish it'd go away. But, you know, I just don't get anywhere on this issue. And the bottom line is money. It's always money. And that really upsets me. I'm basically told, let them die. They're over 70, and the problem will resolve itself eventually. So it's a heartbreak for me, but yet they're all my friends. And my husband said, why don't you just go to a more liberal? But that's like singing to the choir. I just feel like if I leave, there aren't going to be any advocates for social justice in the church. There's three of us out of the entire church.
Yeah, that can really be a heartbreak. Multiple heartbreaks, but one most recent, most deep, and most compelling for me is about... stemming from my daughter's arrest for a crime she didn't commit, but to which she confessed, and my subsequent learning about coercive interrogations and all of the ways that
or naive or uneducated or innocent that were in jails. And I learned it as a mother. I am a professor. And I, my heart almost completely broke. And it almost, but I do hope that it broke open and not, you know. And since then, since June 2013, she's okay now, but others aren't. And I know it, and I know it. I know it really deeply. And I know it's devastating. It devastates communities, it devastates families, and thousands of innocent, and maybe not so innocent, but maybe don't deserve to be in jail forever, are, their lives are gone. And we miss out. And my daughter has joined me a few times, and we have spoken about it, and trying to start a prison teaching community with Augustana College, where I teach. And my community to be in prison. Because my daughter could be there. And even though she isn't somebody, she is. And that's what I want my community. I don't want my college community to go there. I want the prison community, prisoners to be there.
And the thing that I thought of is just the in many ways, the state of the community of Holden right now is heartbreaking in some ways. I had a very romantic vision of this place, and a lot of those things have been so fulfilling, and I've had a really growing experience here, but I don't think it's a secret that there are a lot of challenges to this place, too, particularly in this moment. And so I'm hopeful that us as a community can strengthen and come together, and I'm also worried. I'm just, I think it's a tenuous time in our community here. So I think about, like, what my own hopes were for this year here and what I would like to get out of this, and I think some of my own expectations have to shift and change. So I guess I'm like discerning what it is that I try to hold on to and grasp, and what it is that I like can shift with. So I guess that's something that I think of.
I think probably the most heartbreak that I've felt is through mental health issues in my family. And I lost my son. My daughter has gone through, but it's kind of on the, what I would call the other side right now, and doing really well. But it's, so it's always really hard for me to watch others,
yeah,
or to read of others, or, you know, it just kind of brings me back sometimes. And it's hard. But it also, I think, I'm more empathetic to others going through that, which I'm grateful for.
Right. Well, the pastor and me is recognizing what a sacred moment we've just shared. And I want to say, Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayer. Amen. Thank you for that. It is in this work when we are able to recognize that our hearts break along with our neighbor's hearts, we're able to move forward. We are all connected. Very briefly, want to just move to this. These are the guidelines for our conversation that I want to encourage us to have today, that we would take responsibility for what we say and feel without blaming others, using I statements.
So take responsibility for what I say.
Yes.
Not for what we say.
Yes. Yes. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Be empathetic to one another. You just did a remarkable job of that.
holding each other's pain. Be sensitive to different communication styles. We'll actually talk more about many different communication styles a little later, but recognize we do it different. Ponder what you hear and feel before you speak. This is tough for extroverts. You can do it. Examine your own presumptions and assumptions and perceptions. You come with a story, with people who shaped you, with a community that give you a lens on the world, and we invite you to get to know what those things are. Keep confidentiality, and by that I do not mean to keep secrets. Secrets actually destroy us. But by confidentiality, I mean hold one another in the best light and recognize that someone's story is their own story to tell. So don't go telling other people's stories so that they lose that thing. Trust ambiguity. We are not actually here to decide who is right and who is wrong. We are here to explore with one another. There are spaces where we must decide who is right and who is wrong, but thanks be to God, this is not that space. Also, I want to encourage us in the midst of that not to freeze one another in time. We are people who believe in transformation, and so let us let transforming things happen to us. We get to change our mind. This is my daughter, Maddie. She knows what we're going to do next.
And she likes it. So you'll need to pull up another chair.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So do any of you ever do group building with string? So it's not uncommon in your practice. Good. Any of you who don't feel like you're a good catcher? Great. You still need a chair.
Oh, I need a chair.
Yeah.
Okay.
So would you please, if you're not a good catcher and the person next to you didn't raise their hand, would you help them? Those who are not good catchers. Okay. So I will hold on.
So if you didn't raise your hand and you drop it, then you need to really look at it. That's what you're saying. So,
okay. Just know our gifts and graces. Okay.
That's right. So we are going to pass the string around the circle. But this is not a good way to do it. That is. All right? You want to be first.
All right.
So your job is to, once you get it, wrap it around your finger, keeping connected to me since I'm first. And so the string makes it a corner at your house. All right? Let's see.
Oh, we knew that was going to happen. That's all right. I'm wrapping it around my finger, and I'm going to pretend I know how to throw, too.
Close enough.
Not make a corner, you said?
Just so there's an angle. It's toss it someone.
Just Roger and Charles are not your choices.
Oh, sure. Be smart about it.
God, no, I gotta do it this way. It's not gonna happen.
It seems like a simple exercise, doesn't it?
I'm like, no. So a friend of mine who identifies as on the autism spectrum got ordained, and in the ordination process, typically all the clergy will come and lay hands on people. But that for him was sensory overload that would not have been very life-giving. And so he actually had this exercise.
Oh. Awesome.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been over.
No. Are we all in?
Yeah.
Oh, Roger.
It's Roger.
Oh,
I didn't see him.
Nice. Well done.
I think you won the prize.
And I think you toss it to... Where's the cat when we need him? Okay, if you would tie it around your finger.
Just a little bit.
And then throw it to me. You would pull your string taut Just wiggle it up and down. Excellent. But at every place there's a connection, at least one. Yes? We have a closed community here. It's a very short-term community. But we impact each other. And we can work together if we go up and if we go down. And if every other person were to raise theirs, and the others would go down, we create something together by our individual activity. Yes? And if you were to slack off, it impacts the whole thing. Right? Mostly we just wanted to make you guys work for it today.
Like,
would
someone let go,
this
whole thing would fall down?
Wouldn't it? Yeah, it would. This is a way of recognizing how we're the body of Christ in the world, that we are all connected to each other. And when one suffers, we all suffer. And when one rejoices, we all rejoice. We are tied together.
But it does require receiving what somebody offers.
Nice, yes.
It's true.
And then extending that without cutting, without stopping. Otherwise, right, we would just have...
If we were to cut, we would impact everything.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of lessons that we can hold here. But right now, I just want us to think about the ways in which the interconnection matters. Madeline, would you like to roll this up? Hallelujah.
All right, so our next thing here...
Sit down here.
So I do believe in invitational leadership, which means I can't force you into anything, as much as I want to. But I have... I'd like for us to do a role play here as a way of beginning to understand how a community works together or not when we have different ways of talking to one another. And there are 9 parts to this, and 9 of us, who identify as grown-ups in the room. So will you join me in some play here? You're part of a community, and the pastor is unable to be with you, but you've got this great opportunity to paint your church. It's been beige forever. It's looking a little worn down. And the pastor was called with this great opportunity with money to do this painting. But the money goes away on Wednesday. And if you don't spend it by Wednesday, then it's gone forever. So you have this opportunity, and this group of people have gathered together. Now, part of this is that the church has been struggling and has rented their building out to a Wednesday night group. And the folks of the church don't know much about the Wednesday night group, but know that there are a lot of them. And so the Wednesday night group has been invited to come and be a part of this conversation. And we are going to do our best to figure out what color the church should be. So each of you have a role that's listed on yours. Does anybody have a question about what it means? Right. Roger, I made you the facilitator. Would you get us started?
Well, welcome everybody. We've got an important task tonight. We do need to be deciding what color we're going to paint the church. Thank you for being here. And we'd just like to recognize one another. And I don't know who'd like to start off in terms of what your views are in terms of what color the church should be painted.
why we have to change it at all. It's always been beige.
Yeah, it should stay beige. Why would we change it? I mean, I think it's an important kind of disruptive decision. Beige. It should be beige.
Okay, well, so should we, are we then agreed that we'll paint the church beige?
No, it needs to be white. White is the color of purity, and we're all about purity in this church, and I mean, it's obvious to me. I don't even know why.
I agree with you, Sharon. I think it should be white. I think this neighborhood is going downhill, and we need a little purity in this town, and to clean it up and make it white will show that we want to keep these streets clean.
Well, since it's going downhill, I think it maybe would be good to have it be green as a sign of growth and life, like a leaf continuing to grow. So I think green would be a good color.
I don't think we should make that decision based just on our own personal belief or preference. I think it's really important that we get everyone's opinions, have perhaps a vote, or have them write down the color that they would like the church to be, and see what the majority.
That's all well and good, but we need to decide by Wednesday, or the money's going to go away. Now, I don't think we have time. I mean, we came here, right? I think we should be able to decide.
I agree. I don't think we should wait. We don't have time to wait. I give too much money to this church for us to lose out on the opportunity of this wonderful gift. I think we need to do it now.
Perhaps could we hear from one or two of the others in terms of what you think?
Well, I know we're talking about what's going to happen next, but I think I still want to pitch a different color. I just got back from the Holden Village, and the sky was so incredibly blue. It was so nature-inspired. I think we should paint our church blue to really make us look to God in the sky and remind us of that beauty.
Okay, and I don't know your name. I'm so sorry.
That's fine. My name's Charlie. I feel like I'm kind of with Marianne. That I feel like we need to gauge others' opinions before we rush with this. And I would hate to make a rush decision with this.
So you think we should give up the money?
I think if between making a rush decision and giving up the money, I mean, I think we should hold off if it comes to making a rush decision.
And how many members are there in this church? Isn't it possible with such a small church we could all get on the phones right now or email and see what the majority response might be, rather than sitting here for an hour just debating what we personally think should happen?
So you're suggesting that we need to poll the members of the church in
right
terms
here
of
and now.
Right.
Call or email or text, and depending on how many respond, we could see if there is a majority who feel they want it to be a certain color.
Well, I think that's a great idea. If we had a lot of time, that would be great. But Sunday, I mean, it's been 3 days. The pastor announced this on Sunday morning. Everyone who was there had the opportunity to decide and to show up tonight, and they didn't come. So I'm not sure that they care.
Okay, let's just do it black.
What about you?
Thank you for inviting me to speak. I don't feel very strongly myself about the particular color, but I think that we should listen to those who do feel strongly, and I know there are several people here who do feel strongly about a particular color. And so I would like to support them in their color choice. I would like to, yes, because I myself don't care so much, but I heard some people, I had at least two people wanted it white, and that was something that came from their hearts, and there was at least two people there, and the other colors just had one vote, and so that's what I would support.
The good thing about white is if we go ahead and have to do it, you know, tonight, it has to be done today, it's an easy color to paint over, and then it,
usually with most church bodies, you will get a reaction once you've done the action, and then you'll find out what the color was that they all really wanted, and they meant to be here, but for some reason it slipped their mind to come to me tonight.
But I was hearing that there was also a suggestion about it being painted green. Do you want to tell us more why you think green would be the best color?
Well, I've heard the sense of decline, of the sense of not having the resources we want, and if we're looking to the future, we want to grow, and green is a good symbol of life and health and growth.
Change, it's disruptive. I don't think we should leave it the way it is. Spruce it up a little bit.
Can I just check, but you don't actually come to this church, do you?
Not very often.
Hmm. Who else doesn't actually come to this church? Just before. So if you don't come here, why does this matter to you in terms of what color we're going to paint the place?
Well, I'm here representing the group that meets here on Wednesday nights. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, you might be right about the beige. It's been always beige. How many complaints have you gotten over the years about the beige? And beige is accepted by the committee that makes decisions on what color each house can be in this neighborhood. And beige seems to be the color that everyone prefers to pick. White is okay too.
I like that. Thanks.
So we've got a couple of suggestions that are before us. Let's keep it the way it is. And then we've got the options of white or green or blue or black. So does anybody have a suggestion in terms of how we can actually take this forward? In terms of what the next step should be? Sharon, you're wanting us to make this decision tonight.
Well, I want to be able to spend them. I don't want the money to go away, so I want to be able to decide before Wednesday.
Yes, that's probably the really sticking point for me. If somebody is putting controls on when the money is going to be used and spent and for what, I think it's putting us in a position of making a decision without really owning all of the aspects of the decision. And if I'd almost say, well, let the money go.
All right.
Are there others that feel like that? We should just let the money go?
It's a lot of money. We're never gonna have, I'd give $5,000 a year to this church, but it's gonna cost more than that to paint this building. I don't know, we'll never get that again.
I really feel it. I've never heard a complaint about the color beige. A lot of people won't even realize we repainted it, except those who noticed that it was in need of painting. And how many of those are there?
Well, beige is closer to white than green or blue.
So would that then suggest that maybe beige or white would be the safest options in terms of going forward? Even though blue and green, you know, there are good reasons for why those should be considered. But do we think that given the conversation that maybe we should narrow it down to beige or white?
I can live with that.
Would you be okay with that? And for you were hoping for green?
I'm not really invested in the color.
Ah, so you'd be okay if it were to be beige or white, and you'd be the Wednesday night group. What your sense would be in terms of where they would, what their preference would be here?
Well, I think part of my difficulty is I agree that I don't feel like I have a good sense of what that would be. So I guess I'm hearing some suggestion that this has the potential to be a rushed decision, and I would agree with that. I wouldn't want to make a decision before everyone gets input into it.
Hmm. You guys are so gentle with one another. All right, I'm going to thank you. I have done this exercise where people are yelling at each other. And you, have been so gracious in the midst of this. So we're going to end it here without a decision about what color the church shall be. And I'm going to take your things here so you are relieved of your role.
But who was in charge here? Did we let him be in charge?
Yep,
we did. I did. Why did you?
Because I couldn't speak unless he called on me.
Because your instructions were
right.
Yeah, that's right.
How many of you had that instruction?
Three, four of you.
Not spoken until spoken to.
Word up.
I'm.
But you did call on me, so I got to.
For those of us who had a color designated as our choice, did you feel like you were supposed to advocate for your color or not?
I did.
Yeah, you took it away before I could ask them to reread it. Did it say you need to push for your color?
Probably not.
Well, this is the first time I've ever, and I've done this exercise quite a few times, this is the first time I did it, where there was this openness to, well, I don't have to stay with this, but you didn't also have a color designated.
Right, I wasn't allowed to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
What I found quite tricky in terms of my role was that there was a little thing at the end that said that I do not know mutual
invitation. Respect,
mutual invitation and respectful listening. So it was kind of, so that for me was...
You didn't do very well.
Exactly, in terms of...
empathic and...
Yes.
But I was trying, that's me being like not, you know, so that was like a huge constraint. That was really rough for me, yeah.
You were supposed to be not empathic?
No, not empathic, but I was given the task of having to try to come to a decision, but not with that particular capacity. So I found that quite tricky.
Isn't
I must
it
be
tricky?
Honest.
Yeah, it feels foreign, especially given your skill set. Yeah,
pretty. So culturally, we all sort of share the same culture. But there are many cultures where unless the authority person asks for your opinion, you don't speak. Almost half of the room was dismissed until Roger couldn't help himself and invited you in. That's a fairly common occurrence in Berwyn, where 60% of the population is Hispanic. Latino men have been able to move beyond that a little bit, but Latinas, they wait, and they wait, and they wait. And God help us if we don't ask them to come into the room and into the space, because they've always got it figured out. They know how to work the relationships, they know who knows what and who needs what, but if we don't invite them, if we don't recognize that the way we naturally do it, I can't. There's no way in the world I don't offer my opinion. There's no way in the world they do unless someone asks them. So knowing who you're talking to is pretty important in this work. Especially if you're Roger and you have been introduced to these skills, tools, techniques for including the whole space. Julie, you still with us?
I am still with you. So... I want to show you, so there's plenty of research, and Sharon does a lot more of it than I do, about how different cultures communicate with one another. And it comes across a lot of different spectrums. I'll make that so you can actually see it. So we have... differences in communication styles. We have differences in our attitudes towards conflict. Is conflict good in your experience?
Sometimes.
Is conflict bad?
Sometimes.
Often.
In some cultures, it's really clear one way or the other. decision-making style, how we make decisions, that changes vastly across cultures. And we saw some of that just now, right? That for the Wednesday night group, making decisions is a communal process, but it has leadership that really leads it. Approaches to knowing, epistemology there. And then that's just what you see on the surface level. Then there are those deeper cultural roots, which are really hard to get at. These are the things that are somewhat indescribable for many people, unless you're someone who spends a lot of time exploring it and are very self-reflective. And these are things like our beliefs. Like, I was raised with the belief that being on time was a sign of respect. And I hold that so deeply that when somebody's late, I do have to do the internal math of they come from a different belief set. That they, in fact, in my community, showing up on time is just weird. Because the first thing, the primary thing, is relationship. And if you're spending time in another place, it meant that you're attending to the relationship rather than to the clock. Values, so that's relationship is the primary value. And we don't articulate those well. Expectations, that expectation beyond time, the attitudes towards that. In our community, we have folks who just being loud is just part of life, and it is a celebration. And so there is this value of the beauty of noise. I grew up very literally, actually, in a household that thought talking too much was a sin. So for me, I really have to wrestle with that in dealing with this kind of dynamic. Also, you can't see that yet. We have,
apparently you can't see it at all.
No. So there are many different ways we communicate. And this is probably an area of research that you know well. So I was raised with a very direct communication style, or at the very least, I should be direct. That was the good thing to do. If I have a problem, it is my job to tell you that it is a problem. I was also raised to be very emotionally restrained. I'm not a hugger. I will hug if the moment requires it, but I'm not a hugger. And my emotional stuff, I do on the inside. But I live in a community that is largely Latino, where they're very emotionally actually restrained. They will name it as restrained, but and indirect. But it is an effusive, dynamic, expressive style. So what will happen is, in my community, if I want to know what is going on emotionally for someone, I need to know them for a long time. And then I'll get what's going on for them, actually. But I was raised that to be emotionally effusive was something you never did. Only with your closest friends. Where do you think you fall on this spectrum?
Engagement.
Tell us more about what that looks like.
Well, clearly, I can be emotionally expressive.
Yeah.
And some of that, and direct communication is. That just fits for me. Both culturally and personally.
Right.
Where are your people from?
I'm a little different from my people.
Okay.
And I think some of that is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was not as much directness in my family as
So that's something I sort of had to grow into.
Yeah.
And it's partly, I think, why I'm committed to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because where my benefits come from. Yeah, so.
Who do you invite?
Will you invite the next person to speak?
Sure.
I was definitely raised accommodation stuff. Norwegian. No emotion.
Right.
No hugging.
Yes.
I mean, family-wise. I mean, it just, that did not
right.
happen. But I'm, and I think after being at Holden for, I mean, you got a hug here, right? Or
you do.
You
could
right? try not to, but good
you
luck.
You try. It's, but, and not just that. I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons, but that I would say I'm pretty close to engagement sometimes discussion. I think the more I know people, the more engaged I am. I mean, I'm an introvert, so.
True.
But once I know people, I'm an extrovert, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it takes a while to get there for me sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Charlie.
I would say I'm probably growing to be more of an engagement style, but I think the dynamic would resonate more. I guess, could I ask for a more explanation about the dynamic?
Sure.
Stuff?
So if I was to take a crack at it, my family, my siblings especially, when we discuss things, we use our hands a lot, and sometimes we throw things. And I'm going to tell you point blank what I think about you. I happen to be married to someone who will point blank tell me what she thinks about me, but like this. Very calmly. As my temperature rises, hers drops. In my conversations with my colleague who is a Hispanic man who's an alderman, he tends to accommodate to authority. He doesn't get to the point in the first 5 minutes. He comes around along the side, and you have to put it all together to understand what his need is. But he's not going to tell the authority figure what it is, and he's also not going to yell a lot. But when he's in a great place, he is much more energetic and dynamic. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you very much. That does help. Yeah.
So yeah, what do you come out?
Yeah, I think that is resonating for me, but I would say as I'm growing, I'm seeing that I can be more direct in the engagement style. So, yeah, thank you.
Sure.
I'll invite Terry.
Thank you. I think I probably, my basic growing up style was emotional restraint and indirect, but I think at this point I change style based on the setting and the circumstances.
All maturity.
Mm.
Yeah.
Will you invite the next person?
Scott?
Yeah, thank you. I'd have to agree. I have to use different styles depending on work situations. If I'm doing community-based work, if I'm at home talking to my family, that sounds kind of generic, I suppose. But I think I'd be like pretty close to the line on between the engagement style and the dynamic style. That's kind of where I have been, I think, my whole life, and that's the way my upbringing was in rural Wisconsin.
Yeah. So,
and then moving from Lutheran Minnesota to Colorado, I've had to shift style a little bit too. It's like different. Mary Ellen?
Yeah. Definitely, I was raised in a dynamic style type family. What I remember was, you know, everyone always used their hands, and they were very emotionally expressive and let you know. It was real important to let the other person know exactly where you stood in any discussion before it even really got into the details. And the other thing I always remember is if there was any space, if someone took any pause, you jumped in,
right?
You know?
Right.
And when I got married, whoa. I German, and his father was a minister, Lutheran minister, and they were all so, they all talked like this.
You can hardly understand them, can you?
German roots as well. And so they were just horrified by me, because I came in like a locomotive, you know. And I thought, you know, what's wrong with this family, you know? Oh, my God.
Right. And the things they said about you.
Yeah, which I didn't care.
Sure, you're Irish.
We'll even invite the next person. I think
we've got it.
I think that's Roger.
Yeah, Roger. Have you shared?
Yeah. I'm so, what's quite interesting for me in terms of this, this picture is thinking about, you know, family of origin and growing
up.
And then reflecting on, sure, where is it at for me now? And and certainly growing up within my family, definitely on the indirect axis. Probably sort of on the border between sort of emotionally restrained and expressive. So, but probably in the accommodation style quadrant. And what's interesting for me is that, and I recognize this as almost like a value, as a value thing for me, where it feels now that being more direct represents a greater posture of maturity, which is interesting. So it feels like I'm called to greater directness in terms of taking responsibility and saying what do you feel and those sorts of things. Sure. Again, probably on the border between, you know, on the emotional axis. But isn't that interesting that there's almost like a value judgment that being direct is somehow more mature than being indirect?
So
that's an interesting thing for me to reflect on. So,
you feel you're being more honest?
Exactly. Direct. So if it's not kind of like under the surface.
Sure.
But maybe there's a gift in the indirect way as well.
Definitely.
Of course, you know. So.
So you should do segues really well.
Thank you. Now we'll move to what our next point is.
So the
check, will I get that off the decision?
That's right. Yeah.
So I like that you named the value judgment in there, because there is actually no value judgment here. None. And most of the world, it is not in that upper left quadrant. Most of the world finds themselves elsewhere. A lot of folks really, I don't want to stereotype any culture, because we already, I could have stereotyped you as all direct emotional restraint, because that's what the US largely is, especially white folks. But for many people from Asian cultures, where this idea that we speak as one is a deeply held cultural value, this indirect emotional restraint quadrant is really important and highly valued. It's not wrong. But it does mean that when you have a conflict with someone, that you may resolve it not by speaking directly about the conflict, but by taking the person out to dinner. In fact, saving face is a highly held value in that context as well. And so to directly confront someone would actually feel dangerous. When I'm working in a congregation where I have some folks who come from a Scandinavian background, where that indirect emotional restraint is really highly valued, I have to work really hard to make sure that I recognize that people aren't going to come to me when something's wrong. They're going to expect me to read their mind. And so I need to do the work of sitting down with folks and finding out. Where I have experienced this in my own community as being really helpful is that we have two different cultures coming together, trying to make decisions as a community. And the power structure believes that direct, non-emotional communication is the most important, most valuable way of doing it. And if you step outside of that,
you are a problem. If you directly communicate too much, you're absolutely a problem.
And if you get emotional.
Oh my gosh.
It's often called hysteria.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In conversations with me.
Jeannie has been asked to be nicer a lot.
And to smile more.
Oh,
I know. So hard to believe. But if you'd like to talk about budgets, you can just see it go. And sewers.
But isn't it an interesting, I mean, so the actual labels that are given to the quadrants.
Right.
Are, and I think there could be a critique of that because the words that are used, so for me the word engagement is a positive word.
Right.
But if you use the word hysterical style.
Absolutely.
Example, yeah.
That would all suddenly, you know, make a very different kind of value around that.
But
even the labels could potentially be problematic in the ways in which we think about this.
And I think part of what's true for me and why this is so very useful is when we think of it from a dominant cultural perspective, which of course I mean mine, the others are suspect.
I'm going to
cut me off.
Well,
I've never
don't have to cut you off, though. Can
do what you want.
Okay. So one of the ways we experience this, and is we have a Latino population where you walk into the room and you're emotionally restrained, though you will hug everyone in the room, and indirect, and also a different view of power and authority. So, and that's another overlay we could add to this.
The example that I have about that is in budgets, where I get aggressive and engaging and direct. The treasurer who was elected at the same time with me is a Latina, and she's super smart. She can talk rates and numbers in a way that make me a little nauseous. So when I come in and say, this budget is bogus and wrong, and are you kidding me? She walks in and says, so fellas, can you talk me through this? Will you explain to me how you got to this number? And when they tell her the formula they use, she says, so you're using the Chicago, I'm making this up, you're using the Chicago style. Is there a reason you're not using the international banking method, which is the preferred municipal standard? And they look at her and go, boy, I didn't see that coming. When I walk into the room, they know they're in trouble already. Because I don't hide the fact that I think it's bullshit. She does. And we get different things. I set them up, she knocks them out. She's indirect, and she straddles the bottom here.
Okay.
But she appears to be accommodating to the authority. She doesn't push against it.
But she's subverting it at every step. Mm.
Right. Mm. And she's really good at it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I cannot do that. You could set me up, you could give me cards, and I would still mess it up because it's not my style. Mm. But her work gets done her way because she's figured out how to do it.
But part of that took her seeing that she had that gift. And that took a lot of courage to do that in a community that wasn't immediately going to receive it. And part of it is also that the other aldermen that Jeannie and other elected officials that Jeannie works with are constantly pointing and saying, listen to Cynthia. Listen to her. I heard Cynthia say this. Listen to her. Because we live in this culture that is dominated by this. So one of the things that happens in my meetings is that we'll get community members together. And folks, many folks from Latino communities will be really quiet in the room, just won't say anything. And we'll be sitting there, and the perception that the people who come from a direct communication style have is that they don't want to be engaged in the conversation. But that's not what we experienced here amongst the Wednesday night group. It's not that they didn't want to be involved in the conversation. And in fact, many of those folks then feel like, you didn't want me to be a part of the conversation. So everybody's upset. And instead, using tools like mutual invitation or using other ways in which you do the work of making space for everyone to speak and inviting everyone to step outside of their cultural comfort zone, you can come to a better place of understanding.
So part of what we were doing here today is talking about the different ways that communities and cultures within communities reigning. Fantastic. Work. When you find yourself at a loggerhead, it could be because they're jerks. Those country club folks? Mm-hmm. Could be. Could also be that you talk differently. Mm-hmm. That your world views are doing this. And you're not talking on the same value level. You're not hearing what the values are shared between you. And listening to your community and paying attention to how people are working in that community can change conversations. Scott nods like that makes sense. Does it make sense to anyone else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm really stuck on the idea of how gender plays
into this. Oh, yeah.
Right. And especially like, and now the transition of how gender in the workplace is.
Right.
I'm a professor in nursing, and like I've had to be cognizant of.
Really?
That. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And politics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So this is a tool that I find myself going back to all the time as a way of remembering that we do it differently and that we are invited to recognize that in other people and be curious about how other people communicate differently. Because what you are experiencing may not be what the actual truth of the matter is. In Chinese, actually, the character for truth is 10 eyes on a table. And it's deeply related to this concept that none of us hold the truth. It takes at least 10 eyes on the table to see what truth is.
So, Julie, tell us a little bit more then, if you are in a role, a leadership role within a diverse group,
yeah,
where it would seem clear to you that you've got these different styles,
mm-hmm,
that are
sure
present.
Right.
How do you then go about that?
Sure.
Terms of bringing this into consciousness for people,
mm-hmm,
and to what extent are we all called to move beyond our sort of defaults,
right,
as a way of finding each other?
Right.
You know, so
right.
I want to interject here. That's Friday's show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's the next step.
Right, the leadership that it takes to get to that
right
place.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but mutual invitation is actually one of my, it's so simple, mm-hmm, so simple. But it's also got this great effect of upsetting the power dynamics,
right,
in a room as well. It's really fun to watch. But
because the different styles get their own time.
Yeah.
And your question before about maturity, about I want to move to this style's obviously the preferred style. Sometimes, as a leader, shaking it up and trying the different style, just consciously doing it the way someone else is doing it, changes the entire tenor of the conversation. And we spoke yesterday about the I-ness of this. What work do I need to do personally to move? I want us to be here. I want myself to be in this position in this near future. What do I have to do to get there? What are the goals, the steps, the things that keep me from achieving that goal? I used communicating with my Hispanic neighbors. And I asked what the obvious answer was. What's the first and most obvious thing I should do if I want to communicate with my Spanish-speaking neighbors?
Learn Spanish.
Learn Spanish. Absolutely. How long did we decide it would really take
me?
3 years, which is the length of my remaining term. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if I need to talk to somebody now? Well, of course I do. So I am working on that 3-year plan. And what else am I doing? What are the other places that I, of work that I need to do, which I think, Charlie, resonated with your question when you were talking about what you need to do to be part of this evolving community who's in a place of friction. So what are personally, in the communities that we live in, what is our personal activity simultaneously with what the heck is going on in our community? What are the voices and the different styles and the different needs and our shared goals or our divergent goals?
Because we can't get to the heartbreak and really honestly hold it until we have that sense of how we even talk about it.
Right. And so that's the work that we are trying to do and that we're inviting you to think about. Because how do you build a prison community? Who do you need to do that with? I think implicit in this is to change Berwyn, our city of 56,000 people. Julie and I, we got it covered.
Oh, yeah.
The two of us, we don't need any help. Except, of course, 60% of them are of Hispanic origin. Most are second generation or first generation who are more fluent in English than I am, but they do it different. And they have to want the change, be the change. Politics of that grumpy, direct, restrained people, they have to be leveraged. Someone has to work with them to get things done. Who do you need to collaborate with? What are the different factions in your community that are doing this? How do we think about it trying to step away from this really frustrating and somewhat painful activity into opening it up and making it easier to step into? What do you think, Charlie?
I just feel this is really important. Part of the conversation for this community, for all communities.
I think one of the places I've seen this at work that I'm really wrestling with is when bringing folks from a Latino origin together with African American folks, because they're typically diametrically opposed on this scale. And so when we create an environment where everyone feels under-resourced, then we begin to fight for those resources, and we get into our corners, and unfortunately, and it's a dynamic that the people of privilege created.
And maintain.
But instead of folks coming together across these differences, we often experience actually a deeper divide. And so I think it's really important for us in as many contexts as we can to name that there are differences in doing this communication and not one is better than the other.
What strikes me that could be quite an interesting exercise would be to quite intentionally within a gathering privilege one of the of the quadrants, where then we say bring it into consciousness. We're saying we're going to engage, that word, but we're going to adopt
right.
a particular style,
mm-hmm.
And then of course you would need to sort of rotate that. That could be quite an interesting exercise.
Interesting. Here's the
where
question.
Those for whom that's their style would then kind of
suddenly have
the power, and for those for whom it isn't their style, they would feel something of that. That could be an interesting way of being together in conversation right. where the different styles are privileged. Yeah.
I find that when I'm training chaplains, and I usually when I'm overtired, I think that I should have the most diverse group possible. right, of folks who don't match each other and who are not aligned with the dominant culture. And that always kind of works out really well until I've stacked the deck in the indirect accommodating style. When they become the dominant culture of a group, the rest of us go a little apeshit crazy. Because clearly, there are more of them. I mean, in some ways, numbers matter. But I'm wondering how to really tip the scales in a way for your exercise. How do you get the numbers required? Because I have the authority, and I'm bossy.
You are.
And I balance out the other three students pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But how to really get the impact of different styles, mm-hmm. how to do that, mm-hmm. I think we're going to have stuff to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
anything else you would like to add to this conversation?
All right, so I'm in the dynamic style group, and
are you?
I've tried the engagement and accommodation, which has gotten me nowhere. And I'd love to be able to get into the discussion, but they don't want to go there. Mm. It's not allowed.
Right. But so you have two other colleagues, right? You have two other socially justice-minded colleagues. Where two or more are gathered.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
Right?
But how do you get them to when they don't want to? Mm-hmm.
So
need to.
Right.
Like it the way it is.
Well, that's a good question. So you can't change them.
No.
You've tried.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah, I did try.
But it's not that any of these are better. Right. Decisions get made. Communities find joy and happiness and love and thrive in all of these communication styles. Yeah. And so, and they also all have problems in those communication styles. So the curiosity I would invite you to is to think about what their communication style really is, and then get curious about how other cultures solve problems in those contexts.
I think it's 80% dynamic at this church because they have so much money and power.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we have a resource. We can give you more information about these different styles.
Yeah.
And you can do some thinking about not only the positives, mm-hmm. but some of the ways in which they trap us.
Yeah.
Our style locks us into a certain way of being.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much value judgment that goes with
it. The joy, I think, in my work, and I think it's also in yours, is that I don't work with a single style.
No. Yeah.
I don't work with people who have single styles. Mm-hmm. And what Scott was saying, depending on what frame you're wearing, what hat or clothes you're wearing, you do it differently. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is, Scott? Are you just schizophrenic?
No. I think I'm just in different situations where it requires different styles. So.
Yeah.
And then, again, going back to the gender thing, I'm really weary of mansplaining my way through meetings or, you know, changes and stuff with my women colleagues that I don't want to be condescending or patronizing in any way.
Yeah.
Right.
But some situations require more of an engagement style than others. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, things won't get done.
Right.
Yeah.
Do the rest of you experience that? You change groups, and you are different.
Mm-hmm.
Your methods.
And your sense of commitment to the issue.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You. I mean, so some things don't matter so much to me, and I won't need to be inserting my voice. But if they do and they matter, then I will.
Sure.
They're all skills.
Well, and you're working with groups of individuals whose hearts you have to change, and bureaucracy. Yes? Prison ministry, prison engagement? No?
I don't see it as I need to change their hearts.
I want to talk with you.
Because our hearts need to change.
Yeah.
Thank you. When we talk about heartbreak and breaking open, we talk and act differently mm-hmm. than when I bang my head up against the bureaucracy that says, you know, you really should pay all of these fees to get this chicken coop. That there's different expectations and requirements and demands, and to be able to toggle back and forth. But that's what I meant, but I hear your challenge. Constantly working on ourselves.
One of the things that my intern, who is Latina, and I were working on is how we might get some folks together. And I recognize that so many of our folks in the community don't have documentation. And I, my heart breaks for them, and I want a place for folks to come together and talk about what that means and resource and equip each other and such like that. So I say to Maria, we should have a group that gets together to talk about what it means to be undocumented. And she looked at me like I had four heads. Will we ever come together? No! Now what we do, she says, is we have an art group. And we come together and do some art or some writing. And then the conversation will go where it needs to go. Mm. Indirect. Mm. Absolutely indirect, but it gets there. Mm.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, if you would say something nice about Julie.